is Jay Sekulow, a military confrontation between Russia and the United States.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Yesterday, one day after a U.S. F-18 Super Hornet downed a Syrian fighter jet near the ISIS stronghold of Raqqa, a Russian fighter jet buzzed a U.S. Navy reconnaissance aircraft flying in the Baltic Sea near Russian-held Kaliningrad. This Russian fighter jet was an Su-27. Its wings were dirty, meaning there were missiles under its wings.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
The United States is going to protect its forces on the ground, protect its bases from any incursion, and we would use military force to do that. We've already demonstrated that. We're shooting Iranian drones out of the sky. We shot a Syrian airplane out of the sky. And if Russians did something like that, we would shoot them down as well. But the Russia's not going to do that for the reason I just stated. They have their strategic asset. They got all they wanted out of this deal.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Well, the tensions are high. There's no doubt about that. And the tensions are high because the Russians are, not only do we have a situation in Syria with the United States yesterday taking down a Syrian aircraft, which again was not a surprise, but we've got another situation, and that is these frequent flybys. And this is acts of provocation, there's no doubt. The United States has not responded in kind, but we're talking about a flyby that went within, Jordan, they're saying 5 feet of a U.S. reconnaissance aircraft.
5 feet in the air. I mean, when these planes are moving, you know, 400, 500 miles an hour. Now, the reconnaissance plane's probably moving a little bit slower. The jet moving a lot faster. 5 feet, I mean, in not even a split second. We're talking in the milla of the milla of the millisecond would be, contact. That's the danger. You know, I keep going back to the danger of these flyby incidents and this kind of engaging each other too close. It's the what-if scenario that the pilot makes a slight error on either side. You tilt the plane one way or the other for a millisecond, and you've now got two downed aircraft. One, and in this situation, it would have been the Russians that were the aggressor at a time when Russia's already said that our planes that are flying over Syria are targets for Russia. By the way, Australia pulled out. Yeah. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten in Syria between the U.S. and Russia, is that other NATO countries that have been fighting with us will feel uncomfortable putting their planes in the sky because Russia may shoot them down. So Putin has now got himself to that level where I think you could start saying he is closer to Assad than just an outside player playing Russia. I think that they become more of an enemy in this scenario.
You also had, we've talked about this alliance between Russia and Iran. You've got this situation, too. And the United States also this morning, a U.S. F-15 fighter jet shot down an armed Iranian drone that was threatening U.S.-backed forces in southern Syria. So that was a drone that was taken down by U.S. forces. But this tells you kind of the nature of the conflict and the tension that is in the region. When we come back from the break, we're going to be joined by our senior military analyst, Wes Smith, because there's a lot more to it. Russia has also threatened to shoot down any U.S. aircraft flying west of the Euphrates River. We're talking about what that means. So, I mean, this is an escalated tension. Again, the fact is the Russian military, both Air Force and certainly Navy, is no match for the United States. They know that. But these are acts of aggression without a doubt. I think it's a testing. And I think also if you look at the impact of it, there is this idea that if you had, as Jordan just said, I mean, a slight error in a flight plan, I mean, and in moments, you could be in a very significant conflict. So the fact that the Australians are pulling out and others tells you the nature of what's going on there. All right, we're going to take your calls on this. We've got a special election going on in Georgia today. We're going to talk about that as well. And then the horrible situation with that student in North Korea that was a U.S. student who was captured in North Korea, beaten, passed away yesterday. We're going to talk about all of this, and we'll take your calls as well. Logan will let you know how you can engage in all that right
now.
That
is right. Phone lines are open for you. Right now, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. About four lines open right now, so this is the time to get your voice heard today on this issue and others. Once again, I'll give it to you slower, 1-800-684-3110. Join us broadcasting live on social media, facebook.com/JSekulow, where we never go to break, as well as Periscope and at ACLJ.org. We'll be right back with more on Jay Sekulow Live.
When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in the centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. So you've got this whole Russia, Syria, Iran situation breaking right now on all of this. And we're going to talk about what this means and what the impact of all this is. We had a very interesting comment that came in during the break. And I want to take that because I think it really does raise an important issue to discuss.
All right, Linda said, Jay, Russia is not our friends, right? Or are they our friends? They're only concerned with their own interests. Is that right? Where's Russia? Are they our friends?
So this is a global competitor is what I'd call them. They have a worldview. They have a modus operandi. They have a position they want to advocate. They saw a vacuum in the region over the last 8 years, and they're trying to, especially in the Middle East, they're trying to fill it. But this raises, I'm going to ask Jordan first, and I'll ask Wes Smith, our senior military analyst. But it's a great question to start this conversation off. Friend or foe?
I'd say it's somewhere in between. I mean, our U.S. military officials said clearly yesterday that even with these provocations, they're coordinating some of the attacks together in the battle against these terror groups like ISIS, so they haven't cut off communication completely. At the same time, they are certainly not an ally. I mean, they are not an ally. They've never really been an ally. Maybe during the fall of the Soviet Union, but they were really not a power during that period. They were in disarray. So since they have come back to any kind of power whatsoever, ally would not be the right word. I don't think enemy is the right word. I think it used to be competitor, and it's edging towards the way of not enemy, but opponent on some fronts. I think you're starting to see it's not the ideology they're trying to spread anymore. It's the imperial Russia that we're seeing come back more. It's not the communist ideology. It's the we are this imperial-style Russia. And, of course, I've seen these interviews with Putin. They did it with Oliver Stone and all of that. I've been watching those. He admits over and over, even through a lot of his spin, that they cannot compete with the United States on intelligence, on military. They know that.
Right,
but what they do is they can compete with acts of provocation. Things that we would not do.
I mean, that's actually what they're doing. We wrote a book on this called Unholy Alliance, and that's the whole Iran, Russia, Syria connection, and it's serious. By the way, it's available now in paperback. This was released, I think, today. But let me get to Wes on that. You've served in the region. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, I think enemy, Jordan's right, is too strong of a term. I think adversary probably is a good term. If you think of an adversary as someone who tries to bring about adverse consequences for your nation or for yourself, they are an adversary. They are all about Mother Russia and gaining influence and trying to reclaim some of their prestige. But enemy is too strong of a word. We do collaborate with them somewhat. With all the latest things the last 48 hours in Syria, Russia is claiming that they have canceled the phone line where we deconflict the battle space And yet,
how significant is that?
Well, the Pentagon says that's not so.
Okay,
the Pentagon says the phone line is still open. So that's probably something that Russia is doing for their own people to sort of build up their ego.
Okay, Logan.
Good comment came in from Tina. She said, "My son is currently serving in Iraq now. How will this affect the fight in Iraq?"
Good reminder, by the way, that
that
we have U.S. military still in these places. I mean, there's going to be more on the way to Afghanistan, Wes. We saw that authorized, I think, additional up to 4,000.
Up to 5,000, possibly, right.
And then we still got troops in harm's way. I mean, when that jet that we shot down from the Syrian military, Wes, which was a Russian-made SU, I think it was an SU-22, so one of the older modeled. But it was since 1999 that we've had that kind of fighter jet combat.
Right.
But that jet was targeting our the groups that we backed to fight ISIS. But within those groups, sometimes there are our guys, too, our Americans.
Actually, yes, all of the time. We're there to train and assist. So we have special operators that are co-located with the Syrian Democratic Forces. And this particular plane that they shot down actually came in and dropped its ordnance, bombed the SDF forces. They got on the phone line, the U.S. forces did, to Russia and said, tell them to stop. The same plane came back later, and when it went to drop its next load of ordnance, we shot it down.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead. I think we should take a phone call, Logan. We're taking your comments as well, 1-800-684-3110.
Yep, let's go to Robert in Maryland on line one. You're on the air.
Hey, Robert, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Jordan. Hi, Jay. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. First of all, what can the United States do in light of what's happening in Syria most recently with what you're describing to help the Syrian refugees, particularly the Christians? And also the other question I wanted to ask you in light of what you just said, who are the Syrian Democratic Forces that the United States is backing?
Yeah, so you've got two great questions. Let me answer the refugee situation. So you've got not just Christians but other religious minorities that in this region are experiencing horrendous deaths and just horrible, not just poverty. I mean, it's beyond that. The refugee situation is very serious. There's individual pockets where Christians and other religious groups, including Muslim groups, are being exterminated by ISIS, where they still have strongholds. And when I say it's death, and then it's these kind of mass casualties, and then the taking of these young girls as slaves. I mean, this is what's going on in that region. So there, it's a complicated factor, but you raise something that the military has to be also cognizant of as they're dealing with this.
One issue, though, is that when they get into refugee camps, this becomes an identification issue. It's kind of like, you know, the travel ban, which is at the Supreme Court this week, and we may get a ruling on it as early as Thursday. On that issue, they say, you know, the issue is trying to figure out who's good, who's bad.
Yeah.
And the problem is a lot of times, if the Christians do make it to safety, they hide their Christianity inside the camps because though they may have escaped radical ISIS terrorists, these other Muslims at the camp who may not be as radical as ISIS would still persecute the Christians inside the camp if they learned they were Christians. So they try to hide their identity. And I think that's very important to notice that identifying the Christians once they're even in safety is difficult because they don't want to tell people what they are.
Yeah, and as we said, there's other religious minorities that are being persecuted. If you don't agree with ISIS's version of Islam, you're also West subject. You've studied this a lot.
Right.
You're also subject to the same kind of
discrimination.
Well, it's more than discrimination.
Yeah,
persecution.
Persecution, absolutely. And Jordan's right. They have to many times, you know, hide their identity as Christian people. The caller asked about the Syrian Democratic Forces, Jay. It's a very eclectic, diverse group. It is dominated by Kurdish fighters who are truly our allies. Some of the other groups that are part of the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, are from various tribes. A few of them have some links to al-Qaeda. It's not a clean-cut group.
I was going to say, are they easily identifiable, Wes? In other words, is your military person, when you're over there, can you say this is friend or foe?
No, absolutely not. Not with ISIS and not even with the SDF. And so our most reliable ally there are the Kurdish forces, which, of course, Turkey objects to. But the SDF is an eclectic group that's put together. We arm the Kurdish part of that, and all of them are helping us to fight ISIS and the Assad regime. But it's not a clear-cut line of demarcation between the various groups that are part of the SDF.
Yeah, I think this is part of the fight. It was interesting. Charles Krautheimer talked about this. I want to go ahead and play that bite.
The Iranian objective is to inherit the territory of ISIS, which gives them control of the entire northern part of the Middle East, from Iran through Iraq through Syria to the Mediterranean. The Persians have not had that in 2,000 years, and it is within their grasp. So the Russians, the Iranians, the Syrian regime are all on one side, And the maneuver is to make sure they get the territory that ISIS loses.
So this is, I mean, you have to understand what the ultimate goal here. I mean, they're not doing this in a haphazard way. Now, they've gotten serious resistance now, but they're very targeted on where they're going.
Well, we now have a situation. The U.S. has shot down an Iranian armed drone, so a military drone that could launch missiles, shot it down over Syria. So I just understand what's going on in this region of the world right now. The U.S. shoots down a Russian-made, Russian-backed Assad regime fighter jet. The U.S. the next day shoots down a Iranian armed drone. Okay, this is not happening over Iranian territory and vice versa, like when they shoot down one of our drones that are on their territory. This is not like that. They are now engaged. They have a stage of battle. The stage is Syria and parts of Iraq. And at what point Wes, the question is, how long can it stay at, I mean, I think aptly, 10,000 feet before they're fighting each other on the ground?
Yep.
I mean, where you've got Iranian troops. I mean, I know we saw some of that in the Iraq conflict, but very kind of they tried to cover who they were.
Right.
How long does it stay just in the air before it reaches the ground?
Well, the potential for escalation is very, very real. And this is made even more so by Russia yesterday saying that from now on, that any U.S. or U.S. allied aircraft flying west of the Euphrates River, that they will be considered targets and will be shot down. Now, on the one hand, Russia is not likely to do that. They have a lot more to lose than to gain by that. Plus, militarily, we are so much stronger than they are, not only around the world, but in Syria itself. Yep. So they would lose that battle. It's not likely they're going to do that, but the threat is there. And so the potential, Jordan, for escalation is very, very real. Part of what's going on also, though, and this is why this is a skirmish that the United States cannot go away from. Yes, sir. Jordan.
Well, I think we're also at this issue as we come into this this break with a minute. I think something to think about for our radio listeners as we come back. We know the incident that happened with our Navy vessel in off the coast of Japan. We know in North Korea that they killed an American and sent him home.
Talk about that,
We have this situation in Syria, and then we have General Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, say our military is not in an operational point. So how do we get to that operational point so that we can at least be safely sending our soldiers up, or whether they're on vessels or planes, up in a way that they're at least going into a conflict
that they can defend
as capable as possible.
Yep.
Right now, when you get hit by a shipping vessel, somebody's not paying attention and somebody's not focusing. And Mattis has acknowledged that even before these incidents began occurring. That's why I get nervous for our guys over in Syria and Iraq.
All right, Logan, we're going to take some calls and comments when we come back. A lot more on this.
That's right. A few lines are open, 1-800-684-3110. We'll be taking those calls and comments when we get back. As you said, you can also get your comment in on social media. We take a lot of those during the breaks and during the show. Be right back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255.
989-2255 or online at aclj.org.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the broadcast. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. We're talking about the situation, the conflict in the Middle East right now in the Syria region, in the country of Syria, and also the interplay, if you want to call it, or the acts of provocation from the Russians aimed at United States military. And I think that you have to look at that and say, what are the consequences of this? But it was a very interesting call, a very interesting comment that came in on Facebook that I want to get to, and we brought in our director of policy, Professor Harry Hutchison, also to discuss some of this. So let's go ahead and get that's
a good
question. Comment.
Ted questioned any reason why Iranian government is not fighting ISIS too. Now, just to clarify, what are they doing?
So the Iranians are. I mean, this is the where this alliance is. We call it an unholy alliance, but this is where it gets so bizarre. You have a situation where the Iranians are opposed to ISIS because it's the conflict between the Shia and Sunni, and the ISIS is within this Sunni camp. And, of course, the Iranians are Shia. So you have that conflict, and they were utilizing drone strikes. But Jordan brought up a very interesting point during the break. Where the Iranians are engaging is also a place of provocation.
Yeah, so they did for the first time over the weekend, I believe, use their intercontinental ballistic missiles, which they've really never utilized outside of, you know, testing in their own regions. That's concern right there, because those are the same kind of missiles that deliver what? Nuclear warheads, if possible. It also shows that they can utilize those to effectively hit Israel and other places. But when they did target ISIS, because remember, they struck back at ISIS because ISIS carried out a pretty massive terror attack in Tehran. And let's not forget that. That one gets a little overlooked because it happened to an enemy.
Right.
But it happened, I mean, in their parliament. It was on. They were recording it live while they were doing the attack. I mean, it was pretty outstanding. So, when they fired those missiles, though, at ISIS, they picked an ISIS target that was also very close, because these are, you know, battles that are happening on the ground,
right,
to U.S.-backed forces and the anti-Assad forces. So they were kind of carrying out, hitting two birds with one stone. They want to, yes, they want to destroy ISIS, but they also want to keep Assad. The U.S. position now has been getting rid of Assad, or at least disempowering Assad, and destroying ISIS. I mean,
so it's not mutually the same.
No, it's not.
And it's because but the difference between, of course, what ISIS is trying to be, they want to be the established caliphate in the region, and the Iranians would rather that they be the established caliphate in the region. Yep, under Shia Islam. So that's the inter-Islam conflict that's going in right within that battle zone. Let me get Harry in this, because we've talked about this. This is obviously complicated, but we're trying to take it down to its core. How do you see this conflict developing right now from a policy perspective for the United States? Because these are real acts of provocation.
Well, first, Jay, I would suggest that the change in administration from the Obama administration to the Trump administrations sends a direct and threatening signal to the Iranian mullahs. Hence, they have a greater incentive to tighten their relationship with Russia as a buffer. And Russia also seeks access to a warm water port. But I also think that if we look, for instance, at the Otto Warmbier situation for a moment.
From the U.S. student that was captured in North Korea and then ultimately died yesterday.
Absolutely.
In the United States after he was released in
it's
a coma.
Important to note that opponents of the United States have for too long been pushing against an open door, whether it's Iran, whether it's Russia, whether it's Syria in crossing the red line. And so I think the new aggressive posture by President Trump, who has empowered General Mattis, sends a direct signal which threatens Iranian dominance, particularly in the Middle East.
Yeah, and that's important right now. Yes.
And in addition, President Trump's trip to Saudi Arabia rebalances the threat forces in the Middle East to America's advantage.
What are you seeing?
Yeah,
go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, geopolitically, the real objective of Iran and Russia and Syria is propping up the Assad regime. Again, as Harry said, for warm water ports, for other geopolitical reasons. But the reason that Iran and Russia are fighting ISIS and also opposing the SDF is that they realize that ISIS days are numbered. Raqqa sits on the east bank of the Euphrates River. Once it falls, that's the last stronghold of ISIS. And what Russia and Iran are trying to do in cooperation with the Assad regime is to garner as much territory as they can before that happens.
Yep.
Because once that happens, you know, it all changes. And so it's really about territory.
Let's go ahead, Logan, and take Deb on line one.
All right, Deb's calling in Texas. Line one, you're on the air.
Hi, Deb.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call. My question is, if this conflict or, I guess, disagreement between Russia and the United States should escalate, say a plane is shot down, what do you see playing out from there? Like, what are the U.S. options, and what do you see as Russia's options at that point?
This is playing a very dangerous game that the Russians are engaging in, because if you have a conflict with the United States militarily, it raises a host of military option issues, but there's also political consequences and how that plays out. And Jordan, that's why you're worried about one slight mistake on these flybys, and you've got an international incident that's developed.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing, obviously, if Russia came through with this threat and actually shot down a U.S. aircraft on purpose flying over Syria and Iraq. I mean, that would be, again, an act of war that would lead to probably a destroyed Russian air force, I would imagine. I don't think it'd be a large-scale war, but I think we'd take out a few of their bases, and probably their base in Syria, which is their most prized possession. So you destroy that, Putin's got a real problem on his hands. He looks very, very weak. So he could down one of our planes, but the response would be a Putin that could get overthrown, because he could not deal with our response back, especially under a Trump presidency. But you go to this issue of 5 feet away from each other. Now, you have a kind of unmaneuverable plane in our aircraft versus a fighter jet. But these guys, these Russian, they have a lot of issues with it. They don't always have the best equipment. They have a lot of incidents. If they were just off by a split millisecond, you have two down planes, the cause of which would have been Russian aggressive flight.
Yeah, so
it wouldn't have been the Russian shooting down, but aggressive flight patterns and flight error would then lead to a serious international conflict.
So what does it look like from a policy perspective, Harry? I think this is important for people to understand as we get ready to go into break here. If that were to escalate, I mean, they've escalated already. What does that do to the kind of the global situation? If you had that kind of, if there was an actual incident, wasn't just a flyby, but an aircraft down.
Well, I think an incident would be very, very important. One of the collateral consequences of that incident, however, is that it would blow out of the water the so-called Russia collusion story, which has domestic political implications. But geopolitically, I think the United States would be forced to respond to Russian aggression, and that would serve to delimit Iranian power in the region. And I think that long term would be a positive development for peace.
I will say this to what Harry said. Does the media not want to cover it because they love to talk about Russia and campaigns, and they like don't want to cover the fact that the Russia and the U.S. are basically right on the brink of shooting each other's planes down? We already have shot one of their planes down. I think that goes to that media narrative. Like yesterday, there's no coverage of the terror attacks happening around the world. They just want to talk about Russia campaigns because that's a good story, and they can keep talking about the media. Here again, you're getting it from us. It's just breaking news blurbs on television.
Absolutely.
And you know, little headlines. No real deep discussion. And I think that's even with Otto Wambach. I mean, it was a little bit on television, but then
and that was it very quickly.
Because I don't think people want to switch to what would a conflict with North Korea look like, because that would take up more time than Russia campaigning. Yep.
All right, we're going to be here for another 30 minutes. Logan's let you know the multiple ways in which he gets this broadcast.
That's right. If you don't get the second half hour of Jay Sekulow Live, find us broadcasting on ACLJ.org, Facebook.com/JaySekulow, Periscope, the ACLJ app, and the Jay Sekulow Live podcast. We'll be right back.
Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.
tension in the Middle East, and there's no question about it. You've got this conflict with Syria, and you've got the United States engaged, and you've got the Russians engaged, and you got the Iranians engaged. And none of that makes for a very good scenario, mostly because the Iranians are trying to get their version of Islam as the influence point, the caliphate, so to speak, and that's, of course, Shia Islam. You got ISIS, which is a Sunni group or comes out of the Sunni Islam. So you've got all this multiple conflict going on, and then you've got this whole situation where you have this almost conflict happening. I mean, literally airplanes, fighter jets from the Russians flying five feet from a U.S. reconnaissance aircraft in the region. I mean, this is, in a nanosecond, as Jordan said, you could have a major, major conflict. So we're going to talk about that. We've been talking about that. This is what Jack Keane, General Jack Keane, had to say about this.
I was saying this. I had not seen this bite yet. I promise you, we've been busy enough where I was not watching all the cable news. But this is from someone who knows better than I do about military operations, obviously, as a general,
right?
Former generals. Take a listen to what he says about Russia's threat to the U.S.
The Russians are not going to shoot down a U.S. fighter airplane, no matter what we do. And here's the reason. The Russians are happier than they could possibly be. They propped up the Assad regime. They established an air base in the Middle East, a permanent air base, which is a strategic asset for them. If they shot down one of our airplanes, the United States would take down that entire air base.
So here's the thing. They did that. They're doing all this because what they're doing is reasserting influence in the region. And they, because of the Obama administration's policy, remember that lead from behind?
They got their base.
That's what you get. You get the Russians trying to lead from the front.
But what he's saying, I think, is correct. Though I know some of our allies get more concerned, and these are allies who are not engaged in as much conflict as we are, like the Australians. They get a little bit more concerned when Russia makes a threat like this, and they're not the U.S. But what he is saying is what I said, which is that if they were to actually follow through on this threat, then those 60 missiles that we shot at the Syrian base, there'd probably be 400 aimed at that Russian warm water base, and Russia would no longer have a warm water port or air base, and which would effectively take Russia
out of the region,
out of the Middle East once again.
Which would be,
and they wouldn't be able to rebuild it because we just keep bombing it until they were gone. So they talk big, but remember, we're the ones that have been shooting things down.
I think that's important to remember. The president has allowed the military to do their job. Logan, you want to take a comment or a call?
We can see here. Let's take a call real quick and encourage people to call as well.
Because we're going to get about to get into this topic. So
Let's do it. Let's set this up. Well, actually, there's 2 minutes left.
Let's wait.
Let's take a comment here.
Okay.
Here's a comment that came in. This is about the Iranian situation.
Okay.
This is from Chris. Said, should we tell Iran they should not be attacking anyone at all because they cannot be trusted?
The answer to that is yes. I think Iran.
No matter who they want to attack.
I don't care. Even if they're so-called fighting ISIS and the Iranian Revolutionary Guards training the anti-ISIS forces, you cannot trust at all. I mean, I completely and fundamentally disagreed with the Obama administration's position on this. Iran is a dangerous, maybe the most dangerous, certainly in that region. And the rest of the region knows that too, including the majority Muslim countries in the Gulf region. They know how dangerous the Iranians are. So don't, when you see these news reports where Iranians are helping to eliminate ISIS, take that in the context of the fact that the Iranians' goal is ISIS. Yeah, they want to get rid of ISIS for their own advantage. They're not helping the humanitarian crisis. They're not helping with the removal of a regime that has human rights violations. This is a prop up, and they've got their own agenda here, and that's really what they're trying to do.
That's right. And the issue is that Iran, remember, what they want is Assad in power, so they've got their proxy in Syria.
Right.
What Russia wants is Assad in power, so they have their warm water port and an air base in the Mediterranean. What the U.S. wants is to destroy ISIS. And initially, it was not so much about Assad. But Assad started killing his own people with chemical weapons. So then we took action there. It hasn't been determined 100% that Assad has to go by our administration to end this conflict, but ISIS has to be destroyed, but you can't let Iran do it. If you let Iran destroy ISIS, Iran takes more power in this region.
And then you set up Iran as the primary force in that region. The Shia-dominated Iranians, which are just as bad as ISIS. No doubt about it.
Yeah, they're Hezbollah.
It's Hezbollah. It's the same. They're terrorists. Different name. Back with more in a moment.
When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Move to a little bit of a political discussion. There's a big race in Georgia for District 6, and they're saying this is a referendum on the president. But before we get, Andy Economo is our senior counsel of the ACLJ, but he's from Atlanta, as all of us are originally, and Andy still goes back and forth to Atlanta quite a bit from our media center. But the fact is, I think we need to be clear here on the politics of this. I don't know what's going to happen in the race tonight. It's very close. But the president did not actually actively, he did not actively campaign. Maybe.
Did a fundraiser, just done some tweets.
Tweets, he tweeted even today.
Has not been, though, like actively in the district doing rallies and speaking out. He's put out the statement about, you know, this is he's a young, kind of inexperienced candidate, lives at home with his parents, doesn't live in the district. I mean, there's a list goes on and on about, you know, the difference between him and Karen Handel. Now, the issue, though, is not so much to me who these people are, but the money that came in.
Well, 49% right now. I mean, the Real Clear Politics average, it is a dead heat. 49% for Karen Handel, 48.8% for Ossoff. That means it really has tightened up over the last couple of weeks. But it's really, really tight. What did the president send out?
Yeah, the president first tweet yesterday said big day tomorrow in Georgia and South Carolina. And then today he followed up with Democrat John Ossoff, who wants to raise your taxes to the highest level and is weak on crime and security and doesn't even live in the district, followed by Karen Handel. He promoted Karen Handel for Congress. She will fight for lower taxes, great health care, strong security, a hard worker who will never give up. Vote today. That was from Donald Trump, not from me. I just want to clear that up.
Okay.
That's a quote from his tweet.
That's from his tweet. So, Andy, you brought up a really interesting point. I mean, well, it's you can run from anywhere in the state of Georgia for Congress, for a district, but go ahead what you said during our discussion.
Well, I mean, I think it's ironic that here's a person running for Congress, and under the rules, apparently you don't have to live in the district. But isn't it ironic that a person running for Congress in the 6th Congressional District cannot even vote for himself?
In the 6th Congressional District.
It's like district the one fun part.
And he can't get that shot of him coming out of the bowling station with a booth, smiling with a card in his hand, as Karen Handel did this morning, because he can't vote for himself.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been interesting to me. One of the reporters, I like the Free Beacon guys, and one of the reporters from Free Beacon, who, by the way, got kicked out of John Ossoff's coverage. He's not allowing some of these more conservative news sites to even be part of, like, get press credentialed for tonight.
Right.
Now, maybe that's, again, a sign of what they expect. I think, you know, they know this could go either way. But they walked from his house where he lives today, which I believe is his parents' home.
It is.
Unless he's talking about his girlfriend's apartment sometimes. Either way, it took them 2 hours to walk from where he lives to the border of the district. Not, like, inside the district, but just to get into the district. A two-hour walk. So this is in Atlanta. In the surrounding suburbs, as we all know, being from there, that a 2-hour walk means still like a 45-minute ride in the car. I mean, that, you know, because of traffic and things. He is way outside of the district. Now, it's a district that's gotten much closer. Yeah. President Trump only carried it by 1 or 2 percentage points. So it's not surprising that it's a closer race. It's a special election, which by nature they are special. And
then, so usually the turnout is lower.
I think the biggest issue here, I know that a lot of people like say it's a referendum on Donald Trump, except for the fact that he wasn't down there campaigning with a microphone. And so I think it's the Democrats. If they lose all 4 special elections when they think that Donald Trump is at his weakest point, then they've obviously maybe, you know, cursing at rallies and the way that they're using foul language and the left, how far left they've gone is not working for them. That remains to be seen. Maybe we'll they pull one off tonight. This is going to be very close. I'd encourage everybody in that district, if you didn't early vote, better get to the polls today. You have a big influence on it's not so much the makeup of Congress. It's the influence of the kind of idea of where are we right now politically in our country, because this is a bellwether.
Where the general election is going to go.
It's the most expensive congressional race in history.
Yeah, it is. All right, let's go ahead and take a call on this. We've got a couple coming in.
Yeah, let's go to Tim in California first.
Hey, Tim.
Greetings. Thank you very much for all the work you do at the ACLJ. I'm really concerned about the amount of money that is going to this election, especially from my state, California. It looks it's incredible that he's received 8-9 times in the original election the amount of donors from the state of California, over 3,000 just in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is extremely liberal. And they talk about Russian influence. This is, I think, much.
Well, look, I mean, they're allowed to donate, and they have. This was a decision by the Democratic National Committee or the Democratic Congressional Committee to focus in on this like a laser beam, because you originally had, what was the number, Andy or Jordan or Logan? It was like 15 or 17 candidates. Republicans were running.
Yeah, something absurd.
So of course you couldn't get to a majority. And that was part of the, you know, that, what kind of strategy is that? We could comment for that for a whole program. But you look, there's a lot of outside money coming. It's perfectly legal. But people, you have to understand something. There's been a marker laid down on this. I'm not sure it's a referendum on anything, but they are looking at it, Andy, as if it is a referendum.
Yeah, I don't think it's a referendum on the president at all. I think you have to understand something. I know Karen Handel. I represented her when she was Secretary of State of Georgia. She is a conservative. She is pro-life. She is everything that a conservative candidate for Congress ought to be, and would vote with a conservative caucus
and
the
your
Republican
wife
caucus. My wife, but by contrast, you've got to know John Ossoff.
Yeah.
And no one knows him, but I can tell you.
Georgia knows him.
He went. My wife taught at a school, the Paideia School in Atlanta, which is a very good school, but one of the most liberal.
She said he's very smart.
Left-wing schools.
Yep,
there is.
Smart
Ossoff
guy.
Is smart. There's no doubt about that. But you got to know what you're getting here. You are getting a person who worked for Hank Johnson in Congress, who famously, of course, said that Guam would sink if we put too many military installations on it. But don't be fooled by what Ossoff says when he says that
he's trying to kind of run as a conservative.
Right. Well, he's
right,
not
Jordan?
That.
I mean, he's kind of playing this conservative game.
He's gone to some of the voters who were Trump voters in the district who were more independent to kind of say, hey, where do you feel right now? Trying to say, like, is the president weaker in this district? Things like that. Trying to have it both ways. His real first goal, remember, and he lost this, was to get to that 50, so to no runoff, the 50% plus one. Because there were so many candidates. He failed. And there was a question about whether the Democrats were really going to recommit yet again when it was one-on-one. They have. The resources, I mean, this kid cannot say he didn't have the money to win this thing. I think Karen Handel's also been well-funded. So I think it's been fairly even when you look at all the group spending, except for the fact that his money is coming from outside Georgia. End of the day, if I go with my gut, and I don't like doing this because people, you know, throughout the day, they need to go vote there. I still feel like it would be shocking to me if he pulls this off.
How do you think the media's been on this?
I think he's gotten too much negative attention.
Logan,
what do you think?
More coverage than I could possibly imagine. I do feel like
I've had a little bit of coverage this week.
Yeah, a little bit. I do feel like Jordan is right that the coverage probably does not weigh what the result will be.
He hasn't done great on even like MSNBC.
Right.
Like they are like, okay. I mean, like, because they put so much money behind him, the liberals.
He's got a lot of pressure on him.
Yes, he does.
For someone who is pretty new to this.
All right, let's take some more calls. Calls coming at 1-800-684-3110.
Yeah, let's go to Sherry in Atlanta, Georgia. You're on the air.
Hey, Sherry.
Hey there. So I'm in Atlanta. I voted for Karen. And I just wanted to say, even though it's pouring rain out here today, common sense Republicans and American, you know, Atlantans need to get out and vote Karen Handel. And it is in part about the makeup of Congress. I mean, the Democrats are resisting progress in our country. They'd rather decimate our president than work to bring, you know, success and prosperity to our country. And that is a problem. John Ossoff is a poster boy for Nancy Pelosi and the rest of them, and he's a little dweeb.
Yeah, well, no, I don't want to get into it. I want to ask Russell. Let me say this. 140,000 ballots were cast in Georgia's special House race when early voting closed on Friday. So that's a pretty big number. Roughly 57,000 people voted in the election's first round in April by early vote. So if he does lose, does that, as people are saying, does that signal a problem for the left here when they spend that much money if he does lose?
It means we know very quickly tonight, did he pile on more of those voters, or did the Republicans counter his efforts from the last time around? If they did, so here's a good way to predict this race early. If it's, let's say he's up by only two points when those early votes come in immediately, he lost. He lost.
That's
because
right.
That was where his votes came from.
That's
if
right.
He's got that 40-point lead, he still hasn't won yet, but it's going to be a long night. But if it's tight, if that early vote is tight, I'm not saying that Handel has to be ahead in it, but if it's close, he has likely lost. And I would pick up on Sherry's point, weather. Now, that's not going to affect those 140,000 early votes, but I mean, roughly there'll probably be another 100-plus thousand, maybe, will today. I mean, there could be up to usually 200,000, but usually that, you know, I get that high a turnout. Weather does affect. I mean, depending on where you live in the country. Now, some of you from the Northeast and Midwest are used to snow and sleet, and those kind of, it doesn't affect you as much. In these states, like in the Southeast especially, or out West, when they get unusual weather or weather that makes it difficult for older people to go out, and if you have children, difficult to wait in the line, can you get in the door? It's pouring rain.
Yeah. Especially if you're not fully engaged.
Yeah, you decide, you know what? I mean, like, I just can't put it all together to get there today. And weather has an impact, and I will tell you, typically, in the past, that has benefited Republicans.
Right.
That's just facts.
We'll find out. We're going to find out soon enough.
Hey,
all right.
Phone lines are open. We took a bunch of calls, so there are phone lines open. We're talking about this and all the topics we did coming up in the next segment of the broadcast. Final segment for today. We want your voice heard on the air. 1-800-684-3110. Have your voice heard today. Let's discuss all the topics that we did. We'll have exclusive videos also coming up during the break about what the situation in North Korea. We'll be dealing with that.
Yep.
And we have some sort of news going on with that as well. We'll break with that when we come back.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.
Podcast, taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. Follow us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter as well. I've got a Facebook page. So does the ACLJ. So does Jordan. Also at Jay Sekulo, at Jordan Sekulo. And we'll do that. All right, let's go ahead. We said we'd take calls. That's exactly what we're going to do. Let's go ahead and do that.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Judy, who's calling on line one in Jefferson City, Virginia. Judy, you're on the air.
Hey, Judy, go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much, and thank you for all you do. You sure. guys are just great doing God's work.
Thanks.
My question is, what is the United States response going to be to this young man's death with North Korea?
Yeah.
What should it be?
All right, so you raise a question. We're getting a lot of these coming in also via Facebook and Twitter as well as our radio audience. And this is a, look, you have this initial kind of reaction to how you want to respond, but you have to understand the play in that region of the world because it's much more complex than a soundbite.
Yeah, I mean, we have one. There's still three Americans being imprisoned there. Some are dual citizens, but there's three more we want out. I would say, remember, this all happened. He's been in this state under the Obama administration. So this was a problem that the Obama administration did not get him quickly enough out of North Korea, and his health deteriorated to the point where he has tragically passed away. And which, again, when you saw his state, may not be so shocking, but the fact that the North Koreans allowed this to occur and the U.S. Obama administration – and they were so weak on this. They just did not. I mean, honestly, for a group that act like they cared so much about people, they cared so much about their agenda and not about people. But if you just military strike on Pyongyang,
doesn't solve the problem.
Easy to take out the regime, okay? But then you've got this crisis. They're going to fire back for a period of time on South Korea, our ally, serious artillery. They've got Russia bordering them and China. Yep. And you've got a humanitarian crisis you'd have to be prepared for as well. So it would have to be much. Now, could you do limited strikes? Potentially, but how do they respond to that? I mean, they're crazy.
It's not definitely not a stable regime. Yep. Logan, we have a comment.
Yeah, sorry, the president made a statement earlier today. He just tweeted it out and put it on Instagram, so we thought we'd go ahead and play that about this situation. Go ahead. This president.
It's a total disgrace what happened to Otto. That should never, ever be allowed to happen. And frankly, if he were brought home sooner, I think the result would have been a lot different. He should have been brought home that same day. The result would have been a lot different. But what happened to Otto is a disgrace. And I spoke with his family. His family is incredible what they've gone through. But he should have been brought home a long time ago.
This, of course, and we have cases like this. I mean, Andy, we've got a case right now with a pastor, Andrew Brunson, in Turkey.
Right.
It has been in prison, and the administration's working aggressively on that. But these kind of cases, and we've handled them. Yeah. We've handled them out of Iran. We've handled them out of the Sudan. We've handled them throughout the world, these persecution kind of cases where they're getting picked up because of their Christians or their religious beliefs, and then a hostile regime is doing this. There it was a political statement in the situation in North Korea. You've got to be it's multilateral, bilateral, sometimes trilateral negotiations for we've handled these releases. It's very complex, but you got to be aggressive. You can't let him go there, though, in that situation. That student, for, was it 14 months? It was, and he'd been in a coma for, they're saying, a year?
Right.
I mean, this is not acceptable period any circumstance, under any regime.
Definitely the Trump administration, as in the Pastor Brunson case, has helped us. The Secretary of State has spoken out. The Vice President has spoken out.
We're
the
still
President
fighting for his release,
has spoken out, and we're working on the release on a diplomatic basis, and I think and hopefully and prayerfully that we'll achieve that.
But these are really complex. I mean, they're complex cases.
They're not easy to negotiate.
Even when it's a NATO ally. I mean, that's the complicating factor, if you will. I mean, that in the Brunson case, Jordan said he's a NATO ally.
Yeah, I mean, that's the difference here. We're not dealing with North Korea or Iran or Sudan. We're not dealing with an enemy. Those three countries are enemies of the United States. This is, this is a ally that we have share military equipment with, and yet it is turned towards Islam, is turning away from the West. I mean, it's not like they've said they're going to pull out of NATO. I think that they rely too much on U.S. aircraft, the regime, to have the equipment to stay in power, to, you know, keep their position in the world. At the same time, it should not be this difficult. And I think for this administration. Though I do not hold them at all responsible for what happened to Otto. That's the Obama administration, because this happened 15 months into his 17 months there. Yep. This administration, 3 months in, got him out.
Yeah, unfortunately, it was too
late. But it would have been too late 6 months ago. Yep. 8 months ago was too late. So
13 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, so the situation here is that you do not want to see Brunson or someone like that also deteriorate.
Lingering.
Because people, again, a lot of things happen when you're in prison or being held
captive. Especially
in
these countries.
To your body.
And your mind.
Your mind, and you compare those two. You hear about that all the time. We're not a medical show.
Yeah.
But your mental state affects your physical state, and if you're being now malnourished and scared and not sleeping.
In crowded conditions. I mean,
body shuts down.
Yeah.
All right, let's go take some phone calls before we end the show on a little bit of both topics. Let's go first to Gary in Orange, California. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a former Marine veteran.
Thank you for your service.
And I want to thank you guys because I'm a Christian and I pray for you guys.
Thank you.
And support you 100%.
Thanks.
My question is, when I was in Vietnam, we had to deal with China's influence. And I wanted to know if you guys had any insight in China's relationship with Iran and their current military maneuvers that they're practicing with them.
Look, the Chinese are trying to influence from the Middle East to Africa around the globe. I mean, I don't think enough attention's been paid, Andy, to the threat that China can really, as far as their influence and impact, not just in the Near East or the Far East, but down into Africa. I mean, it's a they're everywhere you think that they would want to be. Because they're wanting to get their influence, they're there. I mean, we've seen it in multiple times.
That's absolutely true, and I think we don't really understand and appreciate the extent of the influence of the Chinese. The president is, of course, one of the early persons with whom he met was the president of China, an attempt to open the door there in terms of our relationship with the Chinese. But the President Trump has a pretty firm and good idea of the Chinese, what they are, and how to deal with them.
But they are a big influence, Jordan. You've been down in Africa where you see a heavy presence of the Chinese.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, they're not exporting ideology. They're just basically raping and pillaging the land of resources. So they pay to the governments there in ways that our businesses can't, you know, that would be under illegal in the United States. So they give all this money to officials. They get rights to mining, and they take it out. They strip the land.
Yep.
They don't they don't do social services. They build Chinese neighborhoods.
Yep.
They bring their own workers in. They don't employ Africans. And so they don't employ locals, and it's a real issue. The regimes benefit from it. The people get nothing and then China goes in. That's why, I mean, these are all issues. They don't get a lot of attention. They need probably rethinking of how do you operate in these regions of the world, because the Chinese, the Russians, they look past all issues of morality, and, competing with that is not easy for U.S. businesses.
All right, let's take quickly
the last call.
Jeb in Roswell, Georgia, you're on the air.
Hey, Jeb.
Hey, how you doing? I'm just calling about the 6th district election.
Yep, in Georgia.
I just wanted to say if there are people outside of every I live in that district, and I just want to say there are people outside of every polling place stumping for Ossoff, and not a single one of them is a resident of the 6th district. They're from downtown Atlanta or Ansley Park or Decatur, which are all liberal areas far outside the district.
Well, look, I mean, he's been Joe, I appreciate you calling. He's been funded. I mean, his funding's coming from outside the district to the tune of $50 million.
That's exactly right. And I'm glad and I appreciate that call from Jeb Edmondson, a friend of mine from Atlanta, Georgia.
You got a fan club, man.
I've got a fan club, but I know Jeb. I knew him since he was born, actually, and his parents as well. Lulu and Damon Edmondson, they're good, staunch conservatives and supporters of the ACLJ.
That's what we appreciate.
And I know
that
he has worked very hard for Republican candidates as well.
There you go. And he's got a fan club. What do you think about that, Logan? Should we get him
come up with a name for it?
What are we going to call it?
I'm not that quick enough. I'll say
AE?
Economaniacs.
Economaniacs. There you go. All right. Well, that's going to do it for the broadcast today. We'll talk to you tomorrow again. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.